With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
This is a Boardwalk Audio podcast.
Hello and welcome to Duck Snort Baseball Podcast. I'm Greg Nix.
I'm Waylon McQueen.
And we are here with a special all-star edition of Duck Snort. All the stars are out this week in Major League Baseball. Out and about.
You got your Blake Snells. You got.
Did he end up making it?
Yeah.
He was a replacement. You saw the stuff about Chris Archer, like, basically, yeah, like, shaming the player voters.
It was it's stupid.
I mean, he's been great.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes, it's the All-Star break. It's not really a special episode. I hope I didn't oversell it. We are
live watching the Home Run Derby.
Yeah, the Derby's on in the background. Waylon's favorite player in baseball, Javi Baez, is up as I say this.
So we might talk about the first round of the Home Run Derby.
The most fascinating thing for all baseball fans, the first round of the Home Run Derby. Very memorable most years. While Baez finishes, you can watch. I'll do the housekeeping.
Oh, great.
And thank Boardwalk Audio for supporting us and distributing the show. You can support Boardwalk and Duck Snort by visiting DuckSnortPodcast.com. Click the Support Our Artist link. That'll take you to Amazon. Shop like you normally would. We get a small percentage, so we very much appreciate the listeners out there who do that. Also, thank you to OffTheBenchBaseball.com, our distribution partners. They have some great stuff up this week. A lot of hot stove talk, trades American League contenders could make, a guide to the Baltimore Orioles, who will definitely be selling off a lot of pieces. So check them out. Really appreciate those guys. And now, unfortunately, you have to tear your eyes away from the timeout in between Javi Baez's regular time and
bonus time. Because he crushed it. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you're concerned that Javi's in the Home Run Derby. You were just telling me.
It's one of those things where there's probably not real evidence for the whole, like, the Home Run Derby ruins your swing thing. You know, it's probably just a coincidence. People cool down. But, like, Judge last year for a little while, Bobby Abreu that one year, I remember.
Todd Frazier.
So there is definitely circumstantial evidence, right? Anyway, so I don't know if it's real or not, but I do know that Javier Baez is susceptible.
He's got a big swing.
To emotion. And he has a big swing. And this season, part of what has been great about him is that he's in some way, he still doesn't walk, he still strikes out, but it feels like he has a better control over the zone and he has a better idea of when to not swing as hard as he can. And I'm concerned that he'll start doing that, swinging as hard as he can. He still swings as hard as he can on almost every first swing he takes. But now I feel like he's doing a much better job of, like with two strike counts, just trying to make contact or going with pitches, things like that, not trying to crush it.
Yeah.
And that's why he has almost 80 RBI at the break and he's, you know, an MVP candidate.
Yeah, I'm kind of two minds about the whole, like, Home Run Derby curse or whatever.
Yeah.
Because, like, in one context, like, if the players are saying it, like, the players are kind of saying, like, well, my swing's been funky since the Derby or whatever, you kind of have to believe them because, like, comfort with swing, with your swing, is something that can come and go. And I think that's pretty legitimate, even if it's mostly a mental thing more than a physical thing. But on the other hand, it's like, I think a lot of guys who end up in the All-Star game, and especially, like, kind of previously maybe not so great performers like Todd Frazier, where it's like, you know, he's a fine player, but then he had a huge first half that got him into the home run derby.
Oh,
it's
I
like,
see. Yeah.
That might just be out of line. Like, that just might have been the best 3 months of his career,
right,
regardless.
Yeah.
And so, like, I don't know.
And I feel like Judge is the same way, right?
Right. It's like you can't really expect almost any player to have as good of a to continue playing as well as Aaron Judge did in the first half last year.
Right. And I feel like Josh Hamilton that year, he crushed it, had a great second. Like, he continued his second half. I'm just worried because I know Baez is an emotional man.
Yeah.
Like, Schwarber, I'm 0% worried about.
Yeah.
I feel like he's just going to go out and still be. It's not that he's been playing as well as Baez, but I'm not worried about his swing changing if he does well.
Right.
You mentioned the Orioles. I'm going to do like a way back transition.
Okay.
Only because, do you think, is the Orioles what there is the Orioles the most frustrating team to be a fan of in Major League Baseball?
Well, I'd put in a half a vote for the White
Sox. For the
Sox.
White Sox. But you you're still
no.
less than 15 years removed from a World Series.
Yes, absolutely. And I do have if not a tremendous amount of faith in the ownership group, I have a certain amount of faith in the current personnel in the front office that they will not make decisions that actively undermine their competitiveness.
Right.
And I think the Orioles tend to make decisions like that.
And
they tend to make pretty inexplicable decisions.
And if you're an Orioles fan, you have zero faith that a pitcher can be developed in that system,
right?
Right? So.
Yeah. I think the other team actually that would be sort of near that same level is the Mariners, just in terms of like their they haven't been to the playoffs in so long,
right?
Like it, and they've had close calls that were then sort of like those teams tended to collapse. Like, there's no reason. I mean, foreshadow. we're gonna talk about the Mariners in our favorite and least favorite players ever segment in the second half of
Part,
the show.
What, nine? I don't know.
Something like that. And there's no reason a team should have as many good players as they've had and not make the playoffs like in 18 years.
I feel like that's a little, I agree with you. That was the other team I thought of. It's almost like a different type of frustration because I feel like the Orioles could and should be a marquee franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have been in their, like, I feel like they have that potential to be one of, like,
they have a lot of history.
They have a lot of history.
And they have that ballpark that is, like, one of the, I would say, like, one of the, not, it's hard to use the word legendary because it's not that old, but it's a ballpark that changed baseball.
It's really, it's a standard bearer. Like, the current ballpark trend started with Camden Yards, and it still holds up.
Right.
There are ballparks that have been built since Camden Yards that are worse than Camden, or I mean,
absolutely.
I shouldn't say worse, but aren't as well thought of as Camden Yards. I don't know. That was we didn't prepare to talk about that, but just when you said Orioles,
tangent.
God, it's so. I just feel like if I was an Orioles fan, I couldn't imagine being that frustrated.
Right. Well, no, it's funny that you mentioned that because I was listening to the White Sox podcast that I contribute to, and I also listened to the Sox Machine podcast.
There you go.
Dan Szymborski was on it, who we've had on this show as well. And he grew up an Orioles fan, and he was talking about trading Machado and how his worry was that, like, they were going to trade Manny Machado for, like, a sort of league average second year or third year major league player as the centerpiece of the Manny Machado package because they'll be like, well, he can help us compete now. And it's like, you're so far from contention. So I like that is the kind of frustration I think Orioles have of just like having absolutely no faith that the front office will make the best decision for the health of the franchise.
You know what I think I have sympathy for is because I'm a Dolphins fan and I feel like it feels the same.
Sure.
Like they're kind of former glory, could be a marquee franchise, but just cannot make a good decision.
Yeah, can't stop tripping over their own dicks.
Just constantly. Anyway, what we were going to talk about, the big news of the week, other than this All-Star game weekend, is the St. Louis Cardinals, the most hated franchise in sports, I think. That's me. I was just
go
I was
on.
Making a kid. Fired their manager Mike Matheny.
Little joke.
Yes, they fired their manager Mike Matheny. because...
Well, it seems like for a lot of reasons. Yeah. I read an entire article on The Athletic today by one of the Cardinals. It seems like they have a couple Cardinals beat writers, but I think Bernie Miklas is his name or something like that. And it was basically an annihilation of the Mike Matheny tenure in St. Louis.
What are the big bullet points of...
I guess the ongoing one is just like tactical incompetence. Like,
yeah.
He's been a manager for like 6.5 years or whatever, and he still has no idea what to do with a bullpen and no idea what to do with double switches, that kind of a thing.
Did he take over for La Russa?
Yes.
It's so funny because La Russa history has not been kind to, as far as like
right.
current how to manage it. Like La Russa, Max Muncy beat Javier Baez like pretty easily.
Yeah, crushed Javier Baez.
Good.
Quick tangent.
Yeah.
Love the Mike Muncy or the Max Muncy
Max
story.
Muncy, yeah. Oh my gosh. What a great. We haven't really talked about it, but
no, we'll have to talk about
we'll
it more
talk about
another
it more
time
later. But
pretty crazy.
It's the perfect story. It's a perfect baseball story.
Yeah,
it happens.
Absolutely.
It seems like it happens all the time, every year
to the Dodgers.
It does. It's basically Bellinger it's over again, isn't it?
No, it's Chris Taylor over again, and prior to that, it's Justin Turner over again.
Oh, because he's like a reclamation.
Yeah,
I get it. But I mean, they always have some guy that starts crushing the
right.
ball.
Anyway,
but
Matheny.
Here's what I wonder. I wonder tactically how much better he really would be than La Russa if La Russa was still managing. Because La Russa was like a... I guess La Russa was probably good with double switches and stuff. I'm sure that...
Yeah,
that
I mean,
different.
I think like basic stuff like that. I also think like it depends if you're saying like would 80-year-old Tony La Russa be better? Probably not. But I think when La Russa started as a manager, one of the things that he was known for was sort of like the progressive way that he kind of thought
sure,
about bullpens
yeah.
and that helped kind of like change...
Yeah, that's true.
Change baseball. Like, I mean, a lot of people sort of, for better or worse, credit La Russa with inventing the closer, the one inning closer with
right.
Eckersley.
I think this is just a tangent filled episode already. That's like one of those unfortunate things almost with like how people started a copy, or it hasn't been like that much, but with like the Andrew Miller like
right.
thing. But it's like you got to have Andrew Miller.
Right.
And so the closer trend is like you have to have Dennis Eckersley.
Yeah.
You can't
and
just like have a like that's the unfortunate thing about that is like he had Dennis Eckersley. What he did, he didn't figure out the closer role, he figured out how to use Dennis Eckersley.
Right. And so the question that I have is like if young Tony La Russa came about today, would he like be innovating in a different way, I guess.
Yeah, it's impossible to know because old Tony La Russa stopped innovating.
Yeah,
he became very set
in his
ways.
Big cranky baby.
And it's kind of happening to Mike Socha right now where he was the best manager and he's like not the mm-hmm. best manager. But if you're saying if young, however old La Russa was, 38-year-old La Russa came into the league, would he be would
right?
He be like
would
a,
he be
would
Gabe
he be
Kapler?
Like, yeah, would he be Gabe Kapler?
And by Maybe. That, I mean, would he be tasting ice cream and then spitting it out so as not to swallow calories?
I laid into him so hard when the Phillies started.
Oh, yeah, you
and
did.
And I take that back because he's doing something right.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of your preseason or early season thoughts have not
this
aged
is why
well.
I hate predictions so much.
Your Aaron Judge having a down year prediction. Your Kansas City Royals finishing around 500 prediction.
Well, I hedged that one from the moment I said it. So that... did I make any good predictions?
I don't know. I only remember the bad ones. Why would
yeah,
I
too.
Remember the ones that make you
good
look
ones.
Good?
Yeah.
I'm sure you did.
But anyway, Matheny is fired.
Yeah, so basically, tactically, he was not a good manager.
Mm-hmm.
And then this article on The Athletic was saying, you know, obviously there was some other stuff that came out recently about how he was not on speaking terms with Dexter Fowler, who is regarded as one of the most engaging and gregarious players in
yeah.
Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
How he was enabling Bud Norris's bullying or hazing of Jordan Hicks in the bullpen. And then this article also just went in depth on kind of like how those problems have been prolonged. How the players he's basically lost the clubhouse. Like
right.
Yadi Molina did not trust him to make pitching
oh, I mean,
changes.
I feel like if you lose Molina,
right?
It's
exactly,
it's over immediately.
And so, like all of these reasons that he was hired, that he was a young manager who had expressed interest in analytics, and he had was kind of established in St. Louis as the, you know, catcher for some very good teams, yeah, and all of this stuff kind of like eventually just transformed into dust, like the end of Avengers, and sort of like
spoiler
alert.
Idiot, see Avengers.
So it seemed like long overdue.
Yeah, it felt like that because there have been grumblings for a while now.
Yeah,
for sure. Like this season has been rough for Matheny.
I mean that the article, both the Fowler thing and the Hicks and Norris thing, are two of the biggest gripes I have about like old school baseball types.
Yeah.
And he just sounded like this like crusty asshole basically.
That sucks.
Like it sounded like from this article that he was also like very like self-conscious or like insecure. Like he couldn't take like criticism from in the clubhouse, yeah, even if it was constructive criticism or like new ideas, like that kind of a thing. Man, Bryce Harper is wearing an American flag headband right now for the
Bryce
home run
Harper
derby.
I don't. You know, I'm not a huge Bryce Harper fan, but he is exactly what he wants to be. Yeah, I think it's great.
He's Bryce Harper 100%.
Plus,
the
other day I was thinking about the clown question comment. Remember that when they asked if he was going to drink
it's
in Canada?
Clown,
it's a clown question.
That's a clown question, bro.
It was so good. I feel like with going back to Matheny, tangent episode. That's the theme. All of the good managers are not crusty old.
Yeah.
Like Frank, even Buck Showalter, who is old, is not that.
You know, he like, was that, and then
now
he like
not.
Opened
yeah,
up. A little
and
bit,
Francona
yeah.
is like Madden, like all the people that you talk about or that you hear about are great managers aren't the crusty old.
Well, especially like personality wise. Yeah. I mean, like Dusty Baker is a pretty old school kind of a dude,
yeah,
but like you don't hear about his players.
Yeah,
like not liking being in a room with him.
Bruce Bochy is the same, or yeah, Clint Hurdle, who might not even be a great manager, but keeps getting jobs because it feels like he knows.
Yeah, it's,
how
it's
to be
like
in the clubhouse.
It really is like the one requirement for to be a successful manager is to be a guy that people like being around.
That's like the main job they have
yeah.
at this point, right?
But like regardless of sort of the tactical stuff. I mean, yeah, Ned Yost won a World Series, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like nobody is ever going to make an argument that he's a strong tactical manager.
He sucks at managing.
Yeah.
But like
guys like playing for him.
Everyone
you know?
Loves him. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm glad that Matheny is gone.
Oh,
and from this, from what I've been reading about him, not just at The Athletic, but in a couple different places, like I think baseball is better off like for not having him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, any team, you don't want the manager to be a negative focus
yeah.
of your team in that way. I think Kapler with the Phillies, it's fine because at least he's trying. It's because he's trying something.
Harper almost took his BP coach's head off on a
I
line drive.
Who it is. That's very funny. Bryce Harper. Do you think, I was thinking about this too, how do you think Bryce Harper feels about Mike Trout?
I don't know. That's a good question. I guess I don't know enough about Harper's like private personality.
I don't either, but his ego seems like it's through the roof, right?
Yeah, but
he
also seems
well.
Like an okay dude, all things considered to me.
I think so too. But I feel like his ego is way bigger
than
Mike Trout.
Like, he's probably competitive. Like, he probably wants to be better than Mike Trout.
Yeah. I wonder what his relationship is with Max Scherzer, because they're, like, the two best.
Yeah.
Or supposed to be the best.
Yeah.
So,
you know, we're talking about a lot about the All-Stars. That
was
our...
transition into it?
Yeah, let's...
I think we just both agree that it's nice that Matheny's not there. I'm all for the Cardinals being in turmoil, obviously.
Yeah, but I mean, I think this helps them long term. Like, if he's even short term, it helps them.
I'm also for Dexter Fowler getting a win because I don't care what team he plays for. He was on that 2016 squad,
right?
And he contributed a lot.
Yeah, what a fucked up thing to like organizationally. Like Mozeliak, I never had a problem with, but to throw a dude under the bus like while he's on paternity leave, it's pretty fucking lame.
The other thing is, someone the other day was like, I was talking to another friend of mine who's a Cubs fan, and he was like, the Cardinals are done. And I was like, they're not done because they're the Cardinals and they've come back from double-digit leads in August.
Yeah, like I mean, it's also like history. The Cardinals are the second wild card team I would not want to face. You know?
It'd be terrible.
They're the kind of team that will like just go on a random fucking hot streak because they're the Cardinals and win the World Series off the second
wild
card.
Could you imagine if you were the Brewers or if you were like the Braves and you ended up with the one seed and then the Cardinals won the playing game and you had to face the Cardinals in a series?
Yeah.
It'd be a nightmare. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's do the transition that we're going to do.
Yeah, so we just wanted to talk about the All-Star Weekend just a little bit and sort of looking for a way in to talk about it. I had a couple of ideas how to make the All-Star Weekend bit better. One of them we talked about earlier this season, which I think that there should be a fastest man in baseball competition.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Which we talked about sort of as going a few ways, like 100-yard dash, running around the base path.
Home to first.
Yeah, which I just think would be fun all around.
I think it'd be great.
And reward like a kind of different player than the home run derby.
Yeah.
I also think like a fastest, like hardest throw in baseball or something like that, or maybe longest throw, something like that. I don't know if teams would be down for that because of the increased probability of like somebody hurting themselves.
What about like an old timers home run derby?
Well, so my second pitch was just an old man game.
Yeah.
Like a full game of like retired players.
I don't think it could be nine innings. I think it, because the celebrity softball game, I don't hate. I'm probably one of the very few people that is still excited for it.
But it's not, I don't think it's fun to watch.
It's only fun because like, you're right, it's not that fun to watch. What's fun about it is if George Brett plays in it and I get to see George Brett swing a bat or field a ball.
But see, like, yeah, I want that, but like
a real game.
But like, yeah, let's see what they still have, you know?
That'd be...
Because it would also be fun. Like, I don't think the same players would be the best players that...
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Like...
Oh, but here's the thing. We can get Bo Jackson
to
play baseball again.
Probably. Right, exactly. Like, it maybe wouldn't be fun. Like, maybe it would just be sad seeing, like, a bunch of formerly great players be not great anymore, but...
Like, think about how hard it is to throw from third base to first, and think about how hard that would be if you're 63 and you haven't done it in a while. Like, I don't know. I guess I would love to know if George Brett could throw from third to first in an effective way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe it's, you know, maybe there's like an age demographic or something where it's like...
What if it's... Oh, sorry. I was going to interrupt.
No, it's okay. I'm just watching whatever this like Army, weird. Navy...
I was going to say, what if it was like an old-timer Hall of Famer or near Hall of Famer type game versus like the single A All-Star team?
I would watch that. I mean, we're getting more and more close to like sort of traveling freak show kind of a thing of like barnstorming, like but like, yeah, sure, why not?
Or like the high school, like, do you think a team comprised of living Hall of Famers, if they put like, if let's just say every living Hall of Famer said they would play, and then whoever put the team together put together the people who are in best shape, could they beat the best high school team in the country? Or whatever the baseball version of an AAU high school team, like All-Stars is?
I truly have no idea.
Well, I don't either. Like, if Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa or Ozzie Smith, who I'm sure could still play defense, like if all of those people are on the team.
Well, that's why I'm like, I think I'm more interested in like just old guys versus old guys, but like,
because I don't want to see this. Right. I just want to know.
Just
who
curious.
Would win.
Yeah, I mean, probably not. I think it'd be hard for the old timers team to come up with pitchers that would rival the like high schoolers.
You don't think
Tom
Glavine still has it in any way?
Maybe he does. I don't know.
Greg Maddux definitely does. Are you kidding me?
He's always going to be able to pitch
how fast he pitches.
But like, what I'm curious about is like, you know, so we were talking about Gabe Kapler. Like, Gabe Kapler's in incredible shape. Like, would Gabe Kapler be the best player on a team full of Hall of Famers? You know what I mean? Like, who's still in shape?
That's
like,
why I think Bo Jackson would still be one of the best players.
Dude, that guy's old and fat and has a fake hip. Are you kidding me?
But he's Bo Jackson. He's in incredible shape.
He's not.
He was born always be in incredible shape.
They just did a 1993 White Sox reunion, which is a team that he was on, and he's like fucking old and fat. Like,
you're underestimating.
Like, maybe he could still hit it 500 feet, but like, he's not gonna have like speed out in the outfield.
I bet he would. I bet he's still super fat. He's Bo Jackson. I don't care how fat. Bo Jackson can show up and he could weigh 420 pounds, and I would still be convinced he's one of the top 100 fastest players in baseball.
Well, that's a crazy thing to think, but you do you, man. Okay, so my last pitch for how to improve All-Star Weekend is to move it after the season.
No, terrible idea.
Yeah, you don't think?
No, I think that's...
I'm on the fence about it. I don't know if it would actually improve. But, like, I think you might get less people bowing out of it. Like, at least in terms of, like...
I don't know.
Like, the guys... Like, all the pitchers who pitched the Sunday before...
But the season's so long.
Yeah.
If you were on any team, think about if you were on
a
terrible
team. Yeah, I guess it'd be
team.
Like the Pro Bowl, and the Pro Bowl sucks.
Yeah, I think
okay,
it would be like
strike
that
one from the record.
Part of the reason Pro Bowl sucks is like, who would ever want to try at football more than they would have to?
Yeah, right.
It's an injury risk even if you're not trying hard.
Yeah.
But I think like if you're a pitch, like if you're Eric Hosmer and you're on a team that's not going to make the playoffs, there's no way you want to show up for like an extra game.
Yeah.
Not that he's an all-star, but like, you know what I'm like, or if you're a pitcher, you're done. I think I get this sentiment, but I think it has to be mid-season for it to be effective.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That's the trouble with the World Baseball Classic that we talked about, like how to fix
that.
Yeah,
I want
like,
that to that, be mid-season for sure.
Yeah, that needs to be mid-season. And I think putting it at the beginning of the season is smart because at least it's when everyone's had a break.
Yeah.
I think at the end of the season, the World Baseball Classic would be a disaster.
Oh, for sure.
Also, I mean, I've seen this sentiment echoed many times, but did the World Cup make you miss the World Baseball Classic?
It did.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
It has a similar vibe. I feel like the World Baseball Classic is climbing its way up there.
I mean, it's not as good as the World Cup.
Oh, no, not at all. But like
the World
Cup
just means way more.
But the vibe of how... I mean, but the players seem to be pretty invested in the World Baseball Classic.
I think the Major League players in the World Baseball Classic would still rather win the World Series than...
I see what you're saying.
The World Baseball Classic. I think a lot of the players in the World Cup would trade their club titles for a World Cup title.
What about the Champions League? Do you think I don't know enough about soccer to know.
Yeah, I don't know either, but I suspect that a lot of people would
put the World Cup on the top.
Yeah.
I mean, you never really forget the teams who won the World Cup.
Yeah.
It's part of it.
Yeah, and it just means so much to the fans of their
nation.
respective countries, you know?
That's true.
Like, I'm sure especially for like the Croatia guys, that it is way more meaningful for the Croatian fans that they made the final than like Luka Modric is on Real Madrid and they've won like a ton of titles.
Right.
And like Real Madrid, like that, it doesn't mean that much. It's like the Yankees.
Yeah.
It's like any individual title doesn't mean much to Yankees fans relative to like what making the finals in the World Cup means to Croatia fans.
Yeah, you're totally right. And I think you're right that it does mean more overall. But I think it seemed like from watching this last World Baseball Classic, that's what it's called.
Yeah.
How did I just have a
the WBC?
Yeah, WBC. Like, it seemed to mean a lot to like the, I think that it feels good for the Puerto Rican players if Puerto Rico would have won, to be like, Puerto Rico's the best at baseball.
I'm sure it does.
I think you're right. It doesn't, like, yes, Lindor and Baez would much rather have a World Series ring than the Puerto Rico to win the World Baseball Classic. But I think they invest in it because I think it meant a lot to the Americans when they won. But I think that, like, a country like Puerto Rico or, like, Dominican Republic, where they don't have a lot of national sports or other things to point to be like, let's have a way to celebrate on a world scale. It's still up there. And I think like in a bigger way than like winning the archery championship, you know, something like that would for a nation.
No, I think you're definitely right. I just, you know, I think if the World Baseball Classic is going to eclipse the World Series in any meaningful way for like more than a small segment of people or fans or players, it's going to take a long time.
Oh, I think you're right.
You know,
I don't
think
it's
going to take decades.
I don't think it ever will. And really, the only way it'll eclipse is the players on these teams that aren't major leaguers or that might not ever win a World Series.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. For them, it does. The other thing is like the weird thing about the World Baseball Classic is that it's put on by Major League Baseball.
Oh, that's true.
So
yeah.
Major League Baseball doesn't want it to eclipse League Baseball. You know, like FIFA, like the World Cup is FIFA's like crowning achievement.
Right.
And
it's FIFA's big
the
thing.
Premier League and all of that is like sort of independent of FIFA as an organization.
Yeah. I think the World Baseball Classic seemed to mean more than the Olympics ever did for a baseball team.
Yes.
And it'll continue. And I think for the...
Well, that's just because I think, too, like the Olympics didn't have pro players on the baseball teams.
They did. They allowed them towards the end of when they had it, but just no one...
Minor leaguers.
Yeah. But I think it was probably like no major leaguer is going to give up their players. And the major league wasn't willing to do what hockey used to do, or they stopped...
Yeah, that's true.
Stop play. Anyway, another great tangent.
But
I can't wait for the next World Baseball Classic.
Yeah,
is the
I'm
point
looking
because
forward to
of the
it.
World Cup. I'm also looking forward to the next World
2 years
Cup.
Or a year and a half at this point, I guess.
The All-Star. Do you think the All-Star game, the end of the season, do you think it needs? How do you feel about the All-Star game? Do you like it? Do you think it's good? Do you think it's bad? Are you indifferent?
I'm pretty indifferent.
Yeah.
I think it's fine. It's not like good baseball. I think it's a fun thing. Like I think there's elements of it that I enjoy. I've grown to enjoy the Home Run Derby a lot more than I used to with the new format changes.
Oh, man.
I kind of like seeing the pro players in a like much more casual environment. Like I think it was last All-Star game they did on-field interviews with like George Springer during the game, which
that's
was really
such
cool.
A good idea. Yeah.
I like seeing players like have fun in ways that they're not allowed to. Like when Nelson Cruz took a picture with Joe West at home plate, that was really fun.
Yeah, that was great.
So, and I like the Futures game. Like I think that the weekend in general has value. It's not appointment viewing for me by any means.
Yeah.
Like I would rather watch even a bad White Sox game than the All-Star game. And I do miss regular baseball during the All-Star break.
Yeah,
but
it's
like
a bummer.
I see the functionality of having the All-Star break also. Like,
yeah.
It's good for there to be sort of a little reset.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, the players must love it.
Yeah.
Like, for certain players, it must be like a little bit of a bummer to be selected to the All-Star team.
Yeah. But it is a great feature for baseball as well to bring all of the best players together for the more casual fan to, especially for like, you know, if you're a fan of the Braves. You know, and only the Braves. You don't know Francisco Lindor. You don't know, like you maybe you know Jose Altuve and Mike Trout, but you probably don't know like
Jose Ramirez.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. I can only think of Indians. Right?
Yeah,
but you don't. There's a lot of guys who are like some of the best players in the league.
Right.
Who you've never heard of.
Or there are a lot of players. I think there are a lot of fans out there that are like league fans. Like, so if your favorite, like your favorite team is the White Sox.
Right.
I know this isn't you, but then you know, like more about the American League.
Right.
National
I don't
League.
Watch a ton of the of National League games. So it's also a good check in for me to be like, oh, who's having a crazy season?
Yeah.
Like, oh, Freddie Freeman's having like an amazing season.
Yeah.
Maybe I wouldn't be totally aware of that if like the All-Star voting didn't happen, you
right,
know?
Yeah.
Like the Scooter Jeanette or like random guys like that where I'm like, damn, that guy's like insane.
Yeah.
So I think it's overall a positive for baseball, even if it's not my favorite thing specifically to watch.
Yeah. I love it. Like for some reason, when I was a kid, like I never missed it.
It seems like something
like,
that would
like Little League games
appeal
to
you
it.
Specifically.
Yeah. Yeah. I really super love it. I think the Home Run Derby format change is great. I'm so glad that like the All-Star game doesn't count. Like I thought that was like super lame.
So stupid. Thank
you,
Rob Manfred.
Yeah.
I won't thank you for a ton, but
that is
absolutely
a great thing. And this format changes for the Home Run Derby because the Home Run Derby was getting super. I was like,
it used to be unbearable.
Yeah, it was.
It was
so
like four
bad.
Hours long.
It's just so dumb.
Of Chris Berman just shouting at you.
But this is great. I feel like next to the NBA All-Star Game, and I'm not like a huge NBA fan, so maybe but, like I feel like this is like one of the those are the two successful All-Star weekends.
Yeah.
No one cares about the Pro Bowl and just.
NBA All-Star Weekend is successful. I think the NBA All-Star Game is worse than the baseball All-Star
Game. Oh, yeah, it
All-Star
super sucks because it's just like a weird no defense
thing.
Yeah, because they try to win the game, in the baseball game, I mean.
And
like,
even
they try
if
to play the best they can.
Trying, it's like less apparent, I think, when you're not trying 100% in a baseball game than it is in a
right,
basketball
that's true,
game.
Yeah.
Like if you're going 80% in a baseball game, it looks basically the same as if you're going 100%.
Yeah,
you're
true.
Just like maybe not sliding or not diving or something.
Yeah.
If you're going 80% in a basketball game, like compared to NBA level, like you look like you're really dogging it out
that's
there.
True,
you know?
Cool. So anything else? Any other thoughts about All-Star Weekend?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, we're in it. So we'll see.
I
guess we can talk next week, like in retrospect, how it was.
Anything crazy happen?
Yeah. But yeah, for now, why don't we go to break? And when we come back, we'll talk about, our favorite and least favorite Mariners ever.
Ooh.
So stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Duck Store. Your breaking news announcement from the Home Run Derby is that Kyle Schwarber just beat Rhys Hoskins in the second round. I know people were probably on the edge of their seat about that.
I would love if someone like hadn't seen the Home Run Derby yet and saw this podcast. I was like, I'll watch along with him.
I would love that too.
I mean, I guess I legitimately would love it. It'd be a very silly thing to do though.
So Mariners,
yes.
I feel like this season we've talked about the Mariners probably more than we would have in past seasons,
sure.
Which is kind of fun.
Sure.
I generally like the Mariners.
Yeah, me too.
I think it is, as we've talked about before, including earlier this episode with the playoff drought, it's pretty hard to hate them.
Yeah. And like even before that, I mean, they had that season that saved their season in 95 or saved their
franchise
existence in 95.
Right.
So even before, like they've been like they really their window of good was 95 to 2001.
They're a sad sack franchise. They've had like four good seasons ever.
Yeah. But they have consistently had super fun players.
Yeah. Some of the best players literally ever in the history of baseball.
Yeah.
And yet they continue to be. So I wonder, I would be curious kind of like, A, how many like raw Hall of Famers they've had in comparison to other franchises, and also like the sort of percentage of like the percentage of Hall of how can I say this? The percentage of players they've had that have been Hall of Famers.
Oh,
like,
sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because for any franchise, it's going to be like 1% or whatever.
Yeah.
But I feel like theirs is probably higher just because they haven't been around that long.
Yeah, but they'd like had nobody from like 79 to Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah.
Is like Alvin Dark and
yeah, I guess that's true. Is Alvin Dark your favorite?
Yeah, Alvin Dark. Yeah, spoiler, Alvin Dark.
Yeah, let's get
Mariner.
Into it. What's your who's your favorite Mariner of
favorite
all time?
Favorite Mariner?
Yeah.
It's Ken Griffey Jr.
Okay.
I mean A-Rod. Oh boy, did I consider A-Rod, and oh boy, did I consider I'm burning through all the Mariners. Boy, did I consider Ichiro, but King Griffey Jr. I feel like when I was growing up, I loved King Griffey Jr. And now when I look back on it, I still feel like I didn't appreciate him enough. And he was like one of my favorite players growing up. And even looking back now, I'm like, man, I really... Like, I wish I was in my 20s and 30s and watched baseball and consumed it the way I do now when Ken Griffey Jr. was playing.
Yeah, right. You would feel about him like Mike Trout now.
Yeah, he was so good in the field. He played with, like, kind of reckless abandon in a way that you forget about because he got hurt so much.
Late in his career,
Andy
fucked up his ankle that 1 year.
Yeah.
Well, he was healthy except for the 1 year where he, like, destroyed his ankle climbing
right.
a wall.
Yeah. And then his swing, of course, is one of the most beautiful swings to ever hit and exist in baseball.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things where, like, speaking of Home Run Derby and stuff and, like, having fun, he was, like, one of the first players to outwardly have
the
fun.
The kid wearing his backwards hat.
But, like, at the time when I'm a kid, I'm like, oh, that's cool. I like that guy. But now it's, like, I'm like, that actually is a cool, like,
yeah, no,
he was having fun in a way, like a way a young person has fun.
I mean, he legitimately got shit for wearing his hat backwards during the home run derby.
And he just seemed to have the most fun playing baseball. Like, I was super bummed when he left the Mariners, even though I'm not a Mariners fan. I was super bummed that he didn't continue to be the one of the best players in baseball when he went to the Reds. I was super bummed that he wasn't good on the White Sox, and I was super bummed that he wasn't good on the Mariners. Like, I've just always loved him. I think he's one of the, I think he's a kind of a, one of the tragic in a way. I mean, he's still one of the best players in baseball. He was a first baseball Hall of Famer, but it sucks that we didn't
get to see
what
might have been if he had stayed healthy a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so, I think we've talked about this a little bit on the podcast before, but I have like a little bit of complicated feelings about Ken Griffey Jr. I mean, similarly, I think if I was an adult when he was in his prime, I would have appreciated him much in the same way that you're talking about. But as a kid, I always felt like being such a big Frank Thomas fan, he was overshadowed by Ken Griffey Jr.
I get that.
So I kind of thought like, that guy's a little bit overrated. Yeah, like Frank's a better hitter. Like, you know, in retrospect, yes, Ken Griffey Jr. was the better overall player. But like in my heart, Frank Thomas is the best player of all time.
That totally makes sense.
That being said, like I still did like him and I still did like the Mariners. And Ken Griffey Jr. baseball for Nintendo 64 is probably still my favorite video game of all time. Like, I fucking loved that game when I was a kid.
A good game.
And there was a cheat code in it where you could, if you had Ken Griffey Jr. on your team, he would hit a home run in every at bat if you used the cheat code. So I traded for Ken Griffey Jr. But that being said, he is not my favorite Mariner of all time because I was always like just a little bit bitter.
That makes sense.
And then, yeah, like later in his career, he was disappointing. The White Sox traded for him, like, inexplicably traded for him. Yeah. Like in 2008, he was not the upgrade that the White Sox needed. That being said, he made an incredible play to get them into the playoffs, throwing
out
a runner at home in a tiebreaker game, which was completely out of nowhere.
Out of not center field? Was
he was playing in center field, which truly one of the most ridiculous statements in the history of baseball was Ken Williams saying that they traded for Griffey to play center because center is easier than the corner outfield.
What an idiot.
Which obviously he
or what did he have to say?
Yeah, I mean he was spinning. Like there's no way he believes that. Anyway,
what we can't sleep on is this is one of those things that I learned when I was a kid. And I was like, oh cool, he hit a home. He went back to back with his dad.
Yeah, I mean him playing with his dad is super cool.
Not that that makes him good or fit, but can you imagine a player playing with their dad and then hitting back to back home runs with their
dad? It's pretty insane. The internet would break if that fucking
happened.
That would
be crazy. I couldn't even imagine a player playing with their dad.
Yeah.
Because the dad would have to be good enough to still be around.
Yeah.
And then the son would have to be good enough to be in the majors.
Yeah, he would have to be a phenom. Like, he would have to be, like, because Griffey was, like, 19 or 20 at the time.
Yeah, I think
he'd have to be, like, a Juan Soto kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Vlad Guerrero and Vlad Guerrero Jr., but I guess, is like close.
Think about how far apart
their
Vlad
Guerrero is already in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's like a 6 or 7 year gap. Anyway, every time I think about that more,
it's kind of
like,
mind blowing.
So, who's your favorite Mariner since it's not Ken Griffey Jr.?
I went with Ichiro.
Yeah.
An all timer, another all timer. I think the thing I liked about Ichiro is he is such a unique player.
Mm-hmm.
There's so few people who could take the skill set that made him good and become a great, like the skill set that made him good is like Adam Eaton's skill set basically.
Yeah.
And Adam Eaton is a good player, but he's not going to sniff the Hall of Fame, you know? And so the fact that Ichiro took that sort of contact heavy, defense heavy profile and became one of the greatest players in the history of baseball is pretty amazing, especially starting his career at 26 or 27 or whatever it was. Like, you think about 5 more years of Ichiro, and he's like, he's got 4,500 hits.
Yeah.
You know? Which is nuts.
He's also one of those guys that like also isn't really like a... I like Ichiro because he's not really like a sabermetric darling. He's like almost the opposite of that. Maybe defensively he is, but
defensively,
like,
yeah, I think.
Like he's not like he's kind of annoying to almost anybody that like just looks at numbers, but everybody agrees that he's great.
Well, he's an outlier. I don't think we'll see a career like Ichiro's anytime
soon. Oh no, he's completely unique. And I think you were just saying this, but that's what I love about him is that even if you're like a hardcore like this guy shouldn't be good, I don't like this kind of player, like if I was a GM, you have to they still love Ichiro. Yeah. And they still admit that his value is there. Like, it's the same people who are down on Tony Gwynn, I feel like, nowadays. But they also admit that, like, I mean, Tony Gwynn...
Are there really people who are like that, though? Like, how can you... Like, you can be down on sort of the overall... Like, the efficacy of that profile or, like, the ability to replicate that profile. But to be down... You can't be down specifically on Tony Gwynn as being, like, he sucks. Like,
no way. No. You could say, like, Tony Gwynn is overrated or, like, we didn't... Like, if...
Heard anybody say that.
I've seen stuff about that where he's, like, not that he's overrated. Like, I've never seen anyone argue that Tony Gwynn isn't a Hall of Famer.
Like, maybe... I think you can say in a general way, like, Tony Gwynn's style of baseball is not the... Like, if you average that out across all players, that's not going to be the most valuable way to play baseball. But like, that specific player, like, with that hand-eye coordination or whatever it is, like, you can't argue with those
results.
But also,
like, he had, like, no power, and I don't think he walked... Like, there's, like, that stuff that's just, like, stuff that you value in the game. I agree with you.
I don't know.
I don't even know why I'm arguing for this. I've just seen people... Say,
I'm just surprised you've seen people like
Overrated might be the wrong word, but definitely there's been a case made against Tony Gwynn, almost like the opposite of like a Tim Raines case, where it's like maybe we overvalued him for 30 years or 20 years.
I see.
So yeah, not that he's not a Hall of Famer, but I think sometimes I've seen when Ichiro like retired or when he basically went to the front office, I saw stuff where people would quote like people saying like, Ichiro really shouldn't have been that good or really isn't, but then everyone kind of comes to the conclusion of like, but can you not say he's a first ballot Hall of Famer?
Yeah, I mean, I can see it as like a reaction to like Tim Raines because it's like, probably Tony Gwynn and Tim Raines were like roughly equivalent players in terms of overall value.
Sure.
And like Tony Gwynn got 3,000 hits, so people respect that profile and Tim Raines didn't, so people don't. But like, I don't think that that takes away from what Tony Gwynn did. It only like serves to elevate what Tim Raines did.
Yeah,
you know?
And I think that like it's one of those things where like Tony Gwynn was hitting 350 every year for like 15 years.
Yeah,
or whatever,
that's insane.
Which batting average doesn't matter, but it matters when you're hitting 350.
Right.
Every year. And I think that's like the argument where some people will be like, I don't want to even look at batting average.
Right. Yeah.
But it's like, shut up. He hit 350 every or whatever.
Yeah.
I know that he didn't.
Those people fucking suck though because they're like they're the same as like meatheads. They're just like sabermetric meatheads who are like so tied to this one way of thinking and valuing players that you're overlooking.
Yeah, and that's what I was getting at. And I think that people can take that case against Ichiro too. But my point is that that's so dumb because you have to just look at Ichiro for what he was. A great defensive infield hit machine.
Yeah.
That was also super fun and weird and played in Seattle for so long. Mm. And like, I think that's great. I almost picked him over King Griffey Jr.
Yeah. I will say, so the other guys that I considered, Randy Johnson, who I, spoiler alert, will probably pick for the Diamondbacks. And that's kind of one reason why I was like, I need to pick him for the Mariners. Jay Buhner, I've always had a soft spot for.
Okay.
Edgar Martinez, I thought about.
Oh, Edgar Martinez.
He's another guy who, like, I always thought of him as Frank Thomas Light.
Sure. That's actually good. That almost makes 100% sense in every way.
Very good player and like another Hall of Famer probably, but another player who I'm like, he's not Frank Thomas.
Jamie Moyer. Did you think about Jamie Moyer?
I didn't think about Jamie Moyer, but now that I am thinking about Jamie Moyer, I love Jamie Moyer. I think he gets like an honorable mention for sure.
Definitely.
Like he's the quintessential, like, you know, the Hall of Fame and the Hall of Very Good. I think he's the quintessential Hall of Very Good
guy. Oh, for sure. He's there. His face is on the front
Yeah. The Jamie Moyer Hall of Very Good.
Yeah.
Who's your least favorite Mariner?
Okay, this was so hard for me because I've always had such a soft spot for the Mariners. And I cannot think of a single, I honestly couldn't think of a single Mariner I disliked. I came kind of close for Tino Martinez, but I think I disliked him more because of the Yankees stuff. So here's, this is, I'm basically cheating the question. I'm going to say Adrian Beltre, even though I love Adrian Beltre. But I'm going to say he's my least favorite Mariner because he was so forgettable on the Mariners, he made me not pay attention to him for so long. Like, I feel like he made something about his move to the Mariners made me forget about Adrian Beltre. And so I'm mad at him for not performing better on the Mariners, or at least at first.
Yeah, that was a strange... Beltre's had such a strange career.
Yeah.
Where, you know, he came up when he was like 20 or something, mm-hmm. and had a largely disappointing career with the Dodgers, I think.
Yeah, but then
he had that one monster year right before free agency.
11 war year or
something. Yeah, where he like, I think he got second in the MVP mm-hmm. race, but probably should have won.
Yeah.
And then he signed with the Mariners as a free agent, which was probably the worst place that he could possibly go. I think that it was right after Safeco opened, and it was an even more extreme pitcher's park. And it was especially, I think, not friendly to his profile in terms of power.
Right. Yeah.
Like, but I think it would, like, he, if I'm remembering right, it was like they were the only team that was willing to spend on him.
Because he didn't have like a track record.
Yeah, he only had the
they
one
gave
year.
Him a big contract.
And then he went to the Red Sox for that one year. He's had like a winding
he's had a super
career,
weird career
to end up as like a Hall of Famer. And but I don't know if like I completely buy him as like least. I mean, it's your choice, so you.
Well,
I
really can't think. Like, I was like even going like, do I not like Heathcliff Slocum? Like, I don't dislike any.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's not a ton of guys
that, or at least maybe I'm forgetting one that I obviously, because even like Dan Wilson, I like like their old catcher, but it was mostly just like
Kazuhiro Suzuki.
Yeah. Yeah,
was that a reliever? For sorry, that just reminded me of like
random
Mariners.
I think it's just mostly A, because it made me not pay attention to Adrian Beltre, and B, because I've always kind of pulled for the Mariners because I want them to not be this joke that we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. Not even really a joke. I think everyone just feels sorry for them. And so it was just like another wasted signing for the Mariners. So I felt like for a while I villainized Adrian Beltre.
I see.
And he was really the only person I could possibly think of that I ever had any negative association with the Mariners.
Okay.
And that's why I chose him.
Yeah,
I
that's
almost
fair.
Cheated the question because I could not think of a Mariner.
No. It was hard. Harper is about to
Schwarber versus
blast Muncy out of the water. I had a tough time too. I ultimately went with Carlos Guillen, and this is for very White Sox-centric reasons, which is Carlos Guillen had a game-winning hit in the 2000 ALDS against the White Sox, which was like 2000. The 2000 White Sox were like the first playoff team that I rooted for. Like I sort of came into baseball fandom right after the 93 White Sox, and then they didn't make the playoffs again until 2000 because of the strike in 94,
right?
And then because of a sort of a bunch of different,
I mean, the Royals were gonna win that division in 94, so
are you serious right now?
Yeah, should we look, do you want to look up the, you keep talking about why you hate
Carlos. You can look it up, but that's an insane claim to make. The White Sox were dominating that season. White Sox Expos World Series, what might have been.
The Expos, okay.
But, so, yeah, 2000, and they went out with a whimper in the ALDS. I think it was a sweep. And Carlos Guillen, I believe, I didn't look this up, I probably should have, but I believe Carlos Guillen had the game-winning hit in Game 3 of the ALDS to eliminate the White Sox. I remember listening to it in my like babysitter's car after she picked us up from school on the way home and Carlos Guillen, who at the time could not hit a lick, got this like game-winning bunt single or something like that.
I don't remember this.
I'm probably just absolutely butchering the details. But what I do remember was being like, this Carlos Guillen dude sucks. And then he went to the Tigers and was very good at on the Tigers. Again, sort of taking it out on the White Sox. So that was the only guy I could think of. You're right. It's hard to think of a Mariner who like I have outward antipathy towards.
So do you want to know how the Royals were doing in 1994?
Sure do.
They were the fifth best team in the American League.
Okay.
They were fine. They were 64-51. They were 13 games above 500. They were 4 games back of the White Sox.
Yeah, they were 4 games back of the White Sox, who had the reigning MVP and the reigning Cy Young Award winner.
You know who was only 1 game back of the White Sox? Were the Indians. And that was the Indians that had an up-and-coming Jim Thome and Manny Ramirez, Albert Bell at his peak, Kenny Lofton at his peak, Omar Vizquel at his starting to be his peak. The White Sox were not by any means running away with it. They were 1 game up on the Indians, and that Indians stack, that's basically the 95 Indians team. So you cannot say that the White Sox had that like cinched up.
I can't say that they had it cinched up, but if there was ever going to be a year for the White Sox, it was that year. They had made the ALCS the previous year for the first time in 10 years. They had won the division, and they had all the same players back. All of those guys were in their prime.
70-43. I see what you're saying, where that's probably the White Sox best shot, but I think this was kind of a stacked American League, except for the West. The West was garbage.
The Rangers were 10 games below 500.
And they were winning
first
the division by a game.
That's crazy.
The Angels were 47-68 and only 5.5 out.
That's nuts. Well, anyway, regardless, you can never say what happened, but it is one of the great what-ifs of White Sox fans.
I didn't mean to undercut that.
No, it's fine. But just like the White Sox had made the playoffs the previous year, lost to the Blue Jays.
Right. The Blue Jays were not as good. Yeah.
It seemed like this was their year. A lot of the pundits liked them. And then the following year and the subsequent years in the 90s, they could never recapture it. They lost guys, traded guys, just never. So it's neither here nor there.
And then Carlos Guillen destroyed.
And then Carlos Guillen in 2000.
5 years later. David Cone for the Royals was 16-5 with a 2.94 ERA.
Did they have Saberhagen in that at that point?
No. He was gone by then.
Tom Gordon was starting.
David Cone, Tom Gordon, Kevin Apier, Mark Gubison, and Bob Mulacky, who is a person I've never remembered. And Jeff Montgomery was like at peak Montgomery, although he wasn't pitching that well. I remember this year, so this is like one of the first years that I was like hardcore into the Royals.
Yeah.
Their lineup is like a joke. That was the year Bob Hamlin won Rookie of the Year, Bob the Hammer Hamlin.
Gaetti
was on that team.
I need to see like some run differentials, though, I have to say.
Wally Joyner had a 113 OPS plus.
113
OPS plus.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Bob Hamlin's was 147. Bob Hamlin's OPS was 987. I'm sure everyone's loving this going over it.
I can't believe
this team had 13 wins above. I just remember that they were weirdly in it that year, which was the only year until 20.
I guess they had that weird year.
But so I went from being a Royals fan and probably started following them in 92 to 2003 with this as being the only year the Royals realistically had a shot. So I guess I feel the same way you've done the White Sox.
Yeah.
The White Sox had
like
a much more legitimate shot. And also, there's no way the Royals were going to beat the Indians and the White Sox.
Right.
Because the Indians were about to be the best team in the American League, and the White Sox were just done being one of the two best teams in the American League.
Well.
What if?
Disappointing. The irony is, like, I'm so, like, pro-labor now, and I'm, like, so pro, like, yeah, the players should get what they're worth.
Yeah.
But that strike was heartbreaking.
When I was a kid, I didn't understand it.
Yeah, I didn't understand it at all.
I just thought it sucked. And I still remember the moment I found out that there wasn't going to be a World Series. Like, I remember where I was in my house when I was watching the TV and ESPN SportsCenter announced.
Yeah, I remember coming home from school. I think my parents told me, like, this is, like, they're going on strike. They're probably for the rest of the season. And, like, listening, I think, to, like, a Giants game on the radio or something. That was, like, the last game on of the year.
Until the
and,
strike.
And, like, crying.
I mean, you would have been, like, seven?
Yeah. Something like that, yeah. Anyway.
Right. Well, I hope that doesn't happen again.
Yeah. This is a whole nother tangent on a tangent-filled episode, but I'm very worried that's going to happen when the current labor agreement expires in, like, 2020.
Yeah.
Because that's right when the White Sox rebuild is supposed to be, like, cresting again.
Oh.
So I'm very, like, anxious about, like, way too far out to be anxious, and yet here I am.
I get it. All right.
Well, yeah, let's wrap things up before we get too dark. But that's all. I think we'll have to talk more about that in some other episode.
Yeah, that's a good topic.
We should, like, you know what we should do is, like, play out, like, reconstruct the rosters and, like, MLB The Show or in, like, Out of the Park Baseball and, like, play out the season 1,000 times.
Play out the 94 season?
Yeah.
See if the Royals win?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good app, though.
Good app.
I'd like to congratulate you on an excellent episode.
An all-star app.
Yeah, and unfortunately we can't announce to you guys who has won the Home Run Derby because it's not quite over yet. But
it was Kyle Schwarber.
Maybe.
Well, if you should have said it was Bryce Harper and then one of us was guaranteed to be
it's Bryce Harper. There. But yeah, we'll be back next week with more thoughts, so stick around. Thanks again to Boardwalk Audio and Off the Bench Baseball. Thank you to Joe Weber, our producer. Thank you to Moonbounce for the transition music. And yeah, we'll talk to you guys soon. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
And a Boardwalk Audio podcast. For more information and shows, visit boardwalkaudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.